Josh and Katie Walters are so loved here around Seacoast Church. Thousands have sat under his teachings and stood shoulder to shoulder with him in the vulnerability that he mixes in to his teachings.
And I had so much anger towards this guy that I would have these violent fantasies of what I would like to do to him pastorally, how I would lay hands on this dude, right? Emotionally, I could be driving up the road, fine, and in a moment, I'm envisioning this scene just full of rage and anger. And it was this verse that God used to say, hey, you can let me carry this and trust that I am just. You can trust that I am good.
And Katie's a gifted teacher as well, but maybe most noteworthy is her brainchild, we'll call it, breathed into her by the Holy Spirit, that has employed 13 women in Togo through her nonprofit organization, Francis and Benedict.
The main vision is a sustainable job so that basically they are secure. You know, these women know I have a job that loves me, that cares for me, that provides well enough that I can provide for my own kids. To do that, it takes paying them a fair and equitable wage for what they're making. That helps them really break these cycles of poverty so they really can start to have new levels of security.
We could do a whole series on her nonprofit. We haven't done that, but we have captured the story of Francis Benedict in episode 30 of the podcast. But before all of this,
it was such a downer. She didn't really want to be with me or around me.
There was a lot of heaviness, but I just don't think I realized, like, generational legacy changing, the devastation.
As soon as you give your heart to someone else, have emotions for someone else, and you start to question, do I stay or go? I never saw the subtle drift that even allowed her to consider entertaining giving her heart to someone else, because for a long time it was all purely emotional in her head because I was gone so much, working so much.
But Josh had found where I had tried to contact the man again, was just devastated. I went to bed and it was the lowest point in my whole story. You feel like a monster. You have a lot of shame, but in that shame, you don't want to feel like a monster.
He lets me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul.
And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you.
Behold, I am making all things new. Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.
Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God.
But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him.
Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. For when I am weak, then I am strong.
Certainly, goodness and faithfulness will follow me all the days of my life.
But while she was still a long way off, her father saw her and was filled with compassion. He ran to his daughter, threw his arms around her, and kissed her.
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay, that one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or as a podcast?
Yeah, as a person.
No,
person.
I like you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna lead. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
All right, let me take a guess, but it's not a wild guess, and I'm putting some thought in this. You guys came to Seacoast in 2009.
Close.
December of 08.
December of 08.
So I was close.
You're really close.
I was close.
Yeah. I mean, you probably didn't see our face. Well, I don't know if you did until 2012, but we were at the Dream Center really until the thorn of 2009.
Yeah,
so like April.
Gotcha.
Yeah, March, April.
And then your entryway basically was being hired as a volunteer to be
Satan.
Well, I wasn't hired. Yeah, it was just a
volunteer
dream team deal.
Yeah, I guess you can't say hire.
Yeah,
if you're not getting paid.
Yeah, I would have liked to have been paid, but it wasn't a paying gig.
How does that feel that your first dream team role was Satan? Because not too many people can say that.
It's true. And that my actual first paid role was working with children. And so my resume went from Satan to Kids Coast. That's special.
Parents go to you and say, oh, you're the new director. Well, tell me, what's your background like? What's your ministry experience? What, Seacoast?
Yeah.
Satan.
Yeah. I had to shave my head, wear a skirt, and have full body airbrush. So when I started working with kids, people were like, I feel like I know you.
This is really a good visual. Well, think about mine was affair to wedding director.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know. Best onboarding.
All right. So one of my weaknesses as a podcaster, and I'm trying to get better at it, thinking through what our listenership is aware of. They have no idea what I'm talking about with Satan.
Yeah.
So tell people what we're talking about.
Yeah. So
Thorn was kind of a big deal around here.
It was. That year, 2009, was the first year that Seacoast did the Thorn, which is like Cirque du Soleil meets Passion of the Christ. And so flamethrowers, people swinging from the ceilings. And if you know Seacoast, like, we're a lot of things, but theatrical is not one of them. And so I look back, and it was largely because of Jim Miles, the guy who leads it now, was just very gifted in that way. And so the church culture isn't that way, but the leader here kind of brought it in. And so first year, because there were so many rehearsals, it was largely staff as like Jesus, Judas, all these key roles that required a lot of rehearsal. So they were looking for someone who had time and a little bit of a club vibe, like some rhythm. There was no speaking lines, so that was right up my lane, and I was unemployed. And so Scott Kenny, who was our neighbor, was one of the directors, and he was like, hey, my neighbor used to be a pastor, and he's unemployed. He'd be perfect for Satan. I had nothing else going in life, so I was like, sure. Shave my head, wear a leather skirt, full-body airbrush.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny part. I think they did want abs, but they handled that with the airbrushing.
Oh, yeah. They painted those things right on there.
We're not worried about that part of it. Just go shirtless.
I'll tell you, I think this will be kind of a sweet memory of mine that will be neat for you to hear because it's from a completely different perspective. But I was on some sort of trip, and I know Pastor Josh Surratt was on the trip, and I'll never forget when he, I think, got off the phone with someone or read an email, and he kind of turned around and they're like, Josh Walters killed it at First Wednesday. And it was kind of a big deal because that was your first time teaching here. And wow. I just remember Josh turning around to us and being like, Josh Walters killed it. We're like, oh, sweet. All right.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah. You don't remember your first time teaching here?
I do on the
I
weekend.
I guess it wasn't memorable.
Well, I just don't. I mean, I'm sure I was terrified and near vomited before going up. I used to be so, like, I'm telling you, even doing the open and close, the host moments, man, talk about nauseous and, like, even still now, I get antsy, but.
Yeah. You know what's the worst is there's certain things that you know so well and you can botch it, and that's the closing.
Oh.
There was a time when Pastor Greg came to our first Wednesday. And so I'm a little extra nervous because he's there and we're closing with the blessing and I go blank. And so I tried to play it off. I was like, we're going to close out with the blessing, but we're going to do it together. So.
So did people start it?
I think so. I don't really remember, but yeah, it was pretty scary.
My favorite botched moment like that was actually of Jim Miles, who he was going up to do the close. Normally, there was a season where you had to go up with a Bible and read it.
Yes.
And
yes. They don't have to do that anymore?
No, we don't have to do it anymore. We memorize it, go with a Bible, have it on the screen, whatever. He didn't have the ribbon in his Bible. And so he goes to open it up and realizes it's not in Ephesians. Then he starts flipping through the Bible and realizes, I don't know that I can find Ephesians. And so he says to the worship leader, Brother Martin, could you give me some Finding Ephesians music? And everybody died laughing.
Oh my gosh. I feel like that's real, though. Do y'all think with YouVersion now, like when I go to open my Bible and I'm in a public place, I really do start sweating. I'm like, oh my gosh, how long is it going to take me? Right. Is someone going to judge me? Like the teenager generation, they're probably like not even used to that at all. But
you guys will get a kick out of this. So when I was at the West Campus, we had someone who went up on stage. He was on staff, but he just decided, I'm going to do my own closing. And he just picked a different scripture.
No.
You don't pick your own scriptures. We do.
That is so funny.
The Lord bless you and keep you.
Yes.
Make his face shine.
All right. So all joking aside, when you were doing the Thorn, where were you guys at? Like, had y'all experienced some healing already or in the middle?
No. We were in the middle of it. I always say, you know, I was dancing in the thorn. So when you were dancing in it, the scenes you were dancing in were like the Satan war scenes. I really do think the Lord used that to help capture my heart, because what I didn't have a right estimation of, you know, I don't think throughout the whole thing, was just how devastating this could really be. Mm-hmm. Not to say I made light of it, because I didn't. In no way our story allowed for that.
Yeah.
Especially with him being a pastor. So there was a lot of heaviness, but I just don't think I realized like generational legacy changing the devastation. And we've walked with so many couples now that it is a miracle to make it through an affair, something like that much betrayal, you know? And so I just think during the course of that thorn, I was watching just this war happen over my heart. And I would be up in the scene watching these like heavenly scenes. And it was the first time I kept thinking, oh, wait, maybe this is more about me and you, God, than specifically about Josh and I. Because see, a lot of the voices that I was listening to in the kind of luring away were just, will I lose my salvation? No. You know, it was like that small twist of lies. You know, can I not have what I desire? Do I really have to follow according to his word? Do I really trust him? The path
so
is
Satan
better.
Was still asking questions. He started that in Genesis. For He's still sure. doing that
still,
stuff.
Yes. same playbook, you know? And it was all just twisted, you know, twisted truth. So we were still not in a great spot at all. But I think at this point, you know, we at least had the hope of like, okay, I think we can get through this. I think Josh had the hope too once we moved, but that had been 6 months after the confession that we actually had moved to Charleston.
Yep. Yeah, I think for me, I was looking more for like new memories and shared experience, because even when she would get home from work, I could just see the like, it was such a downer. She didn't really want to be with me or around me still. And so, but she wanted to stay in our family. And so being able to be a part of the thorn gave us kind of a shared mission for a season with her, with the girls, coming to church, being around healthy new friends. And so,
yeah. Did you ever give in to those voices to the degree of, I think I am going to leave Josh?
You know, I look back and wonder, because like I said, I don't think I really realized the heaviness of the situation the whole time. I mean, did I ever pack one bag? No. Did I ever make a plan? Did I ever meet with a lawyer? You know, I had never had any practical action steps beyond my thought life. So I'm not real sure. I do think during the thorn, I remember meeting Charlie McGurdy. She was my dance teacher. And I remember having the thought, like, I wonder if I could ever stay with her if this didn't work, if I couldn't stay. You know, I wonder if I could bring the kids and stay at her house. So, I mean, I definitely had thoughts, but did I ever have any actions? No. So I look back and I'm like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So going into marriage for me, you know, so I'm 25 years old, Christian. And I think at that time, I could pretty much say at that age in my head, I'm like, if Priscilla ever cheated on me, I'm out. Like, I just couldn't handle that. Whereas now, 46 years old, I get that affairs are a little more complicated and, you know, you could probably work through it. And I don't have that peace out mentality now. You are a young guy. I mean, before this all happened, I think everybody entertains that as a possibility, maybe in premarital counseling or just whatever. It's just something in your head. Did you have kind of like a, if she were to ever do this, I mean, there's no way I could handle this. I'd be out.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I'm kind of
long
the same
time
way.
Ago.
Well, I look back and I even think about it now. You know how you go through things in life and look back at those seasons years later and kind of question, like, could I do that now? How did I do that then?
Yeah.
And I really think it was a grace that I was walking in. I do think I very much met my vows and I knew enough in ministry to know that marriage is hard and that we're sinful, broken people. I knew like God hates divorce and made allowance for it because of the hardness of our hearts, and that his best, if while I was still a sinner, he'd send his son for me, that like me laying down my life for her, like this was supposed to be the picture of his love for us. And so, and I knew, I think part of it, I still was close enough to my death to life conversion that I had hope for. Like, man, I never saw this coming. I can't imagine a darker, worse relational death, but I've also seen what he can do. And I know he can bring new life. So I don't feel like it was some measure of maturity or a choice that I was walking in as much as it was a faith decision of what God wants, of who God is and what he's capable of, that just kept me like, and my dad had been divorced, but then married my mom. And so I didn't know that till my junior year of high school. But like, the more I started talking with people and learning my own story, it was just there's a desire to live the narrative God desires and have the blessing
it's
of that.
It's interesting, though, because Joey, I would probably say, I think I would have known he would have stayed, even if I would have cheated on him when we were dating, you know, or early married. Like, you know, you don't really know what's in you until you're pressed, but sometimes other people close to you know what's in you. And we were in premarital counseling, and our pastor gave us this book of a girl who had Alzheimer's, extreme Alzheimer's, and her husband took care of her. I remember being terrified, like, that's going to be me. He's going to have to take care of me. You know, I'm thinking, why else would a pastor give me that book?
I thought you were saying you're going to have to take care of me.
No, well, which would be terrible. He knows that. But I knew then, like, you know, we talked about it and he was like, you know, I would do that. Like, that, this is part of the path. Like, this is the call. And so, I don't know. I think I just did have this security that he knew there's going to be a battle. No way, shape, or form did he think that it would be this specific one. But I think you did have more staying power. And I've seen it continually in other authority that he's had in his life. Like, there is no, like, I'm out. You've treated me wrong. I'm out. He doesn't have that, which, you know, I would say, like, that is definitely more my nature.
Yeah. Now, theologically, would you both now say he would have been justified to leave? Like, would y'all both say if you wanted to, could have?
Yeah.
I mean, biblically.
Yeah.
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 I would have a harder time around, could he have gotten remarried? If we were answering purely like theologically, what does the Bible say? But it's the area where he's made an account for, except for unfaithfulness, which falls into a bunch of, you know,
different and we behaviors. Think it's probably because it is so, it's the path is destruction and hard-heartedness. So, you know, when you've done that specific sin, the sin against your body, your soul, your mind, your emotions, that leads to a hard-heartedness that potentially can you recover from without Jesus, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think we both have so much compassion and empathy for people that are there, that find themselves there. But I do think one of the things that we've said is the couples that we've walked through, and this is just our specific story of walking with a lot of other couples, when there is someone else still, that rebuilding is almost impossible.
Yeah. What do you mean? When there's somebody else?
So for instance, if it's been an affair, a betrayal, a gambling addiction, a hurt, an emotional abuse, anything that it's like people, Bible would justify, okay, you just need to start again or God will bless it. If they have given their heart to someone else and that person is still in the picture and they are able to engage their heart in any way, rebuilding is almost impossible because of the nature of hard-hearted. What that means is you've chosen to love someone else. So you're putting time, energy, attention, emotional connection elsewhere. So that rebuilding phase, I mean, it takes a full wholehearted devotion to God and each other.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other part of it that gets complicated is the people that we see, you know, they may be separated for a year, but the minute they meet someone else,
primarily really because when we first met each other, mind, will, and emotions, there was a desire to be one and be with one another. But as soon as you give your heart to someone else, have emotions for someone else, and you start to question, do I stay or go? Well, you've already 2/3 left. And so if they're still in the picture, learning to love by way of dying, laying my life down, is near impossible.
Now, for you, did it just boil down to a decision? I've got to decide to cut him off completely. Like, I've got to decide that I'm not answering phone calls, text messages. And I know technology was probably a lot different back then, but was it just a decision that you just had to make sort of thing?
I think so. I think a million decisions still.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that 16 years later, I've never like looked him up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a million decisions that just say like, no, this is a no. But was it only me? No. I mean, he was also making decisions. They stayed together too, the other couple. So it was complicated. You know, us moving was a big part of that. Like, could I have driven the roads past him for years and still stayed faithful to, like, I'm not making any choices to connect with him. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Yep.
You know, because the other complicated part, and again, we've sat with people that it's not just been an affair, but let's just stay with affair, is that you feel like a monster. You have a lot of shame. It takes a lot longer to get to a place of godly repentance, mm-hmm. you know, true repentance before God. But in that shame, you don't want to feel like a monster. Right. You're like, wait, I thought I had this idea of me like 6 months ago that's gone. Well, the other person that has engaged in it with you, you're like, well, they're not a monster. You know, so there is this draw to get back to someone who sees you as self-love as much as you wanted to see yourself, you know? Right. And obviously that's anti-gospel, you know, but.
And it seems like people, including the church, have the least tolerance of marital unfaithfulness. It's like, we don't have any problem with having compassion for the alcoholic or, you know, someone that messed up finances big time. It's like, well, that's a mistake. But it's like, you cheat. Mm. And kind of the public perception is, that's messed up. You should have never done that.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, very little grace.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I do want to ask you, Josh, we hear this all the time, but when it comes to divorce, affairs, typically the rule of thumb is, okay, she cheated, but it wasn't all her fault. Mm-hmm. There's contributions to, you know, how would you frame that up in this situation? Most people would say, well, you had to have contributed somehow.
Yeah, that's a big part of our book, actually. And that in that season, I realized very quickly, there was no switch in her I could flip to make her want to stay, make her love me again, make her feel different about me, regardless of how much I served her, wrote her letters, brought her snacks, you know, like prayed over her, whatever. This was going to have to be a God thing. So in that season, all I could do was focus on me, and by way of going after God for my comfort, going after God to help me deal with my anger, going after God to help me deal with my like just deep sadness, because she didn't have the love for me or just capacity to care for me in that way. And so,
would you have even wanted her to? Like, if she was ready to console you, would that have been a safe setup?
Yeah, I definitely wanted it, and that I wanted relationship with her. I didn't know what new looked like, and I believed God could do it, but I wanted her emotional availability, physical availability. Like, I wanted all of her.
Now, did you ever go through bitterness to where you're just like, stay away from me?
Mm-mm.
Gosh, that sounds like a miracle.
Yeah.
Not to ever fall into bitterness.
Yeah, it is. And but in that, so in that season, to
your nothing against you, but you know,
that's a miracle that you of all people.
It's really true.
So in that season, because of that pursuit of God for all those needs for myself, the start with me piece, like all it was me and God. And so I think he helped me see, one, my sin, the degree to which I had been forgiven, but then two, like just in time, I never saw the subtle drift that even allowed her to consider entertaining giving her heart to someone else. Because for a long time, it was all purely emotional in her head because I was gone so much, working so much. We were running so fast, early mornings, late nights, all the things that I thought was adulting. So in that season, I think taking a closer look back and praying through, how did we even get here? It didn't cause me to take ownership for her decision. It didn't dismiss her decision, but it did help me see, man, in any relationship and in any crisis like this, there's a shared responsibility, especially as the head of the home, because there's just some small decisions I made in time that created a culture that even would have allowed for this.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I can't even, you know, imagine from his perspective being able to do that to start with me, because think about if it was, you know, we have different needs, like sexually, Josh and I, but imagine if he had these desires and I was withholding, you know, or wasn't giving him the need that he had for a year at a time. And then I find out he's had an affair in that way, you know, but he's repentant, you know, you're like, okay, there's a part that had to play in that. But imagine if I was trying to show up in that way, you know, 1-2 times a week and still his appetite, you know, leads him to do something like that. So I think that it's always complicated for many people, but for us, it wasn't like he was emotionally withholding from me, never speaking to me, working all the time and not paying any attention to me. It wasn't that. We just try to remind couples that the human heart is complicated, and especially for women, you know, I can only speak for women, but it is like a garden and there are many little ways of tending all the time. And so this one, what do you put a percentage on it? We don't know, but was so much about my own appetite, my own selfishness, my own self-love. But for him to be able to say, okay, it's still a garden that I am responsible to cultivate. So where can I start? You know, where can I really tend to some of the issues that led us there, even if some of them are my own abandonment issues or my own traumas or my own self-love? He still took responsibility to help tend those things right. in me, you know, and that is such a miracle, but it really does take that yep. for every couple who's wanting to rebuild.
Was there a moment in which you both were like, oh my gosh, we're going to make it through, and you're like excited? Like, was there a moment when you're both like, oh my gosh, we're gonna be together?
Yeah, I think it was probably different for both of us.
Yeah, but I would say it was a lot of little moments like that where mm-hmm. There was hope early on, but then there would be like, it very much felt like the three steps forward, two steps back constantly in those initial months. And so I would say there was a lot of little God moments along the way. The most marking one was on this trip to the Grand Canyon. We had moved to Charleston. I still didn't have a job, so I'm home with three kids. Katie went from an elementary school to the jail for teenagers. She was a kindergarten like guidance counselor to kids that have been arrested but not convicted yet, have a guidance counselor in the jail. And so that was the shift she made. And so we, in that time, I find this car on eBay. We fly to Scottsdale, Arizona, are going to drive home over a long weekend, drive up to the Grand Canyon to see a sunset. And I had never been there. This was like the Rand McNally book days. No like phone to guide us there. I have no clue where we're going. Thinking this is a dumb idea. We're never going to find this big hole in the ground, right? And so there's huge trees on both sides of us. Nothing pretty or beautiful in terms of the scenery. And I start seeing these turn arrows. We round this corner right as the sun's setting, and it's the most epic sunset on the Grand Canyon. Katie was asleep in the car, but God spoke to me and said, that's how quickly your story can change. And man, I just started bawling. Katie woke up like, what happened? Are you okay? And, but that's where I think my hope before had been more anchored in the truth of God's word, but I hadn't like really heard it for myself. And so, man, that every day when she got home from work, I would peek out the window to see, like, is there a look in her eye when she woke up in the morning? I just knew all it takes is one word from God, like one moment with him, and he can flip the script mm-hmm. on this thing. And so I'd say that moment was the one that really birthed real hope in me for
that's cool
life yeah. and change.
I think for me, it was the next year, 2009, in May. So we had moved to Charleston in December of 2008. And I know it was around Mother's Day. This is a part, I don't even know if we share this in the book, but Josh had found where I had tried to contact the man again, or we had been writing or something. That night, I was just devastated. Because see, most of the time for me in this path of healing, I was scared of me, is what I was scared of. I knew we would make it if it was according to Josh, but I was like, what do I do with myself? You know? And I don't think I could really trust God with me.
Right. Kind of like the Paul, the things I want to do, I don't do.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And really like, God, can you handle me? Like, are you going to be able to heal this, you know, brokenness in me? And that night, you know, when I was so full of shame, I went to bed, and it was the lowest point and probably in my whole story, but I heard God's words over me, and I hadn't heard him like in my ear through this whole thing. And I just heard him say, like, Katie, I love you. I have plans for your life. And I just think in that moment, I knew, okay, he can handle me. He is still speaking to me. Mm-hmm. How?
Right.
You know, how does he still want to walk with me? But once I knew that, I'm pretty sure, and we never had any contact again from that point on, which you would remember more than me. But I think that ended any kind of like luring back and forth, you know. But that may, but in general, I just know what happened in that moment for me was like, okay, God is going to restore my heart to him, you know? And once that could happen, like what was impossible for Josh and I?
Right. Mm-hmm. Josh, with this other guy, like if you had connections with the mafia, like,
definitely. I don't know what you're going to ask, but
definitely. Hey, no. This actually may be in some personal territory. How have y'all walked this with your kids? Because I know you had two kids that are too young to understand anything, mm-hmm. but now you have older kids, you have adult kids.
Yeah.
Like, what's the conversation like with them as they get older? Because
I think the best ones are the ones that weren't born yet, you know, the 13-year-old, because they're like, well, this had nothing to do with me, obviously. Like, I wasn't even around, so.
Tell them what Abel said after our last, we shared our story at Seacoast just a couple weeks ago, and afterwards they get in the car. And
Abel's 15, and, you know, he was the one that was born, like, during all this, and we get in the car, and I said, buddy, is it hard? I know you've heard our story so many times and we've talked you through it, but is it hard sitting there in a public place, your buddies, you know, hearing our story, hearing mom and daddy's story?
Good question.
And he was like, you know, mom, I just think it's overused. And then he started laughing. He's like, I'm just kidding, mom. It's powerful. He was like, it's powerful. You got to tell it. And it just made me feel so comforted that he could see that God uses our brokenness, you know. And I said, well, buddy, I really feel like we should tell him what a good wife I've been over the past 16 years, you know. And I was like, do you think I should tell the church that? And he was like, I'll slide it in there for you, mom. I'll keep sliding it in there.
I think it's, they've got a lot of close friends now whose parents have gotten divorced, and they've been able to see the impact on their friends and the brokenness in the home, and then going to hang with their buddy and it just being with mom or dad. So culturally, relationally, I think they've seen it and felt it close enough that they know, and they've walked in on us having an argument.
Oh, good gosh, Pastor Josh. What does that have to do with it?
I was totally saying argument until you went there.
I'm red.
Yeah. And so, but they know that marriage is tough. Like they feel the tension, but they also see the, like, man, we are a high touch, high love, snuggle family. With the kids, with Katie and I, we have date night every week. So they see us pursuing each other, loving each other, desiring each other. Like, I don't know that, you know, I ever saw my parents fight. I'm sure they did, but like, I never saw it, you know? And so, but our kids see the raw and the real. And so I feel like with our story, there's details, obviously, that we haven't shared just because.
Right. They don't, age appropriate.
Yeah. They don't need to know the details. But they know the story in full, and I think it speaks to the power of God and the blessing that we are walking in and that they have.
And I think often, you know, you have all these prayers for your kids that they'll be devoted to God, they'll walk in a faith that they're on, but none of that are you really in control of. But what we've said is we want to show them an authentic faith.
Yeah.
Like, we just want them to see an authentic faith in us. And while you don't want this to be a part of that display, it is a part of that display, you know. But I'll tell you, one of the things that's been the hardest for me is, you would think, what do you have to own with your kids was like your actual sin or the pain of your sin. But with our 20-year-old, you know, a lot of her core memories were in our rebuilding of our marriage. She was like 3 or 4, I guess, when we moved to Seacoast. And, you know, this generation wants you to own your mistakes. Anyways, our generation, I think we just had to look at our parents and be like, all hail, you know, and then work it all out later. But this generation is like, let's talk, you know, let's talk about childhood. But the truth is, like, a lot of the rebuilding of our marriage, rebuilding a ministry at Seacoast, because we were starting over, Josh was especially at 27, you know, 28 years old, happened during the core parts of her childhood. And there's ways that I think she felt like, did it take time away, more time away than it was needed for us to rebuild our marriage, which in all honesty, probably yes. Yep. You know, probably yes. And so I just think I've had to own that with her. Like, there's so many layers of consequences that, you know, we know that Jesus's mercy will cover, but there's still pain involved for all people.
Right.
And so I think that's an interesting thing with kids who have gone through any kind of piece of it. You may think, what did the 3 or 4-year-old know? Her friends didn't know it. What, but she felt in our home the rebuild.
Right. Are you done with the mourning process? Like, do you ever get stuck in, I don't know, feeling bad and have to reconnect with God, like, to this day?
Yeah. I do, but a lot less often than I used to. Like, the first time I preached on it, I didn't really tell my whole story, but it was 5 years in at Seacoast, and I cried through the whole thing. And afterwards, Jenna was like, I think we're not ready. I think you're not quite ready yet. And we saw a first couple 5 years in, and I cried through that whole thing and had a lot of self-righteousness also. Like, Josh, you know, I wasn't as bad as him. You know, like, I knew I wasn't ready. And so, but it still is hard. The pain is different. It's not shame. Mm-hmm. it's more like, wow, that's really vulnerable.
Right.
Lord, we're good with that. You know, I'm right. good with that because you see me, you love me, you clothe me, you know, but it's still exposing. Mm-hmm. So it's different than it used to be. But I connect with the pain of it still from our story because we're sitting with so many couples gotcha. That are right there.
Yeah, most time, Katie, I was laughing the other day, laughing at me in my emotional distress. But like any time we go to pray for a couple, it's like, man, I can so easily touch on, it's like I can access that pain. And I cry pretty much every time just because they're no longer empty words. It's like, I know how they're feeling. I know the dark night. And when I go to pray for them, man, it touches on that. But the picture to your previous question, the morning, even to this day, that God gave me for both of us in that was on a, like if you're riding a tube being pulled behind a boat and it's like a 15-foot rope. It's like, man, every time you hit the wake, it's going to shoot you up in the air. But if the rope's 40-foot, 50-foot, the longer that time goes, like it doesn't do away with moving analogy, you, but you don't get air. Like I can think about it. We can talk about it, teach about it, counsel another couple through it. And it may trigger a thought or two that will lead to an emotion that I can quickly dismiss it. Whereas used to, like, man, it would turn on this movie in our minds and trigger this place of sadness or anger or shame or, you know, whatever it was that I just don't think we're... Mm-hmm. We're there anymore.
One interesting thing, though, that has happened through sharing this story so many times is that it's put me really in touch with the mercy of God again, which, you know, we have to always remember the mercy of the cross. But in this way, I've been thinking about how if this was in any other generation in history, I probably would have been killed or in jail.
Gosh.
And I don't know why it's just been sitting so much with me that like I could be in jail.
She can be really dark. I did not know the dark side.
Do you listen to emo music too? I'm like, how did I go so dark? But then let me tell you what it's done is somehow I have started like thinking about death. Okay, jail would be on honestly like the deepest fear for me because I would be away from Josh, away from my kids and couldn't get to them. In body, I think that would be worse, you know, but it's made me start praying for people in prison. Wow. I got in touch with, there's this person doing incredible prison ministry with women in prison here at Seacoast. I'm like, I need to know you. So anyways, it's just strange how God connects you to the mercy and lets you attach to his mercy more than your shame. You know, mm-hmm. I think he'll do that for us as we process those emotions with him, but the emotions come for sure. Right. I just think it's taking them to his feet and yep. letting him help us figure out how to handle them.
All right. So new marriage, same couple. How was this birthed? Who had the idea? Did somebody recommend?
No, definitely me.
Is you?
I'm just saying, no.
Probably. It was not. I think it started just in conversation because mm-hmm. once we were maybe like 8 years in, a couple years after the first time she talked about it, we realized like, man, we were sitting with so many couples and it was always 8 o'clock at night up at the church in some random room. Or we'd go over a couple's house at 9 o'clock once their kids were down. Mm-hmm. And it was a place of like, man, because God had done it in us, we had the faith that he could do it in any story. And so we were kind of like hope peddlers, but just realized very quickly there is way more need than we have capacity to sit with and share. And so if we could write all this out in terms of the principles, the moments God spoke to us, the mm-hmm. things he did in us, that maybe that could be some, because we had such a hard time. I mean, we saw so many different counselors that were awful. Like yeah. we had a community, like a church family that we straight got severed from. So it felt like no man's land. And so for the couples, whether you're in a rural context or not really connected in a church or not even a believer, wanting to get to a new place, questioning how, we were just like, man, I feel like there's so many people
yeah.
that walk through, maybe not our story, but something similar. Now they're at this crossroads and they need something to get their hands on mm-hmm. to just help guide their path.
And so, the wild thing is we really haven't sat with all the hundreds of couples, not one couple that had our exact same story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't know what's in you until it comes out of you. And I think when we would start to sit with couples, we realized like, whoa, he put a lot in us that is just in the soul of who we are that it took as we were rebuilding. And so a lot of that content we never thought about putting in a book until we got to the point where we were up at the church at 10 o'clock one night, then the next night, then the next night. And then 2020 happened. We started doing it in a small group over Zoom. And I think during that small group, you really have to get the curriculum into a format where you can kind of go through it over 8 weeks, especially when you're on Zoom. I think during that time, my sister's written like 13 or something books. So that helps because you're sitting at a family table with her where she's like, you've got to get this mm-hmm. content out, you know?
Yeah. Well, it seems efficient too, because y'all had to have been the go-tos for adulterers. Hey, y'all go talk to Josh and Katie.
Yeah, for sure.
Will you please quit sending people? Now sure. You have a book.
Now we have boom, a book. Boom, and boom. We talk about Mac and Cindy so much. They're telling us that too. Like, hey, could you not keep putting our names out there? Because people are texting us all the time.
Like, so would you say for our listenership, part story, part encouragement, part instructional?
Yeah.
Kind of all the above?
Yeah. And I think it's probably heavier practical than people would think. Because it does have like the raw reel of our story. It's threaded throughout the whole book, our story is. So most of each chapter is just real practical takeaways that they could actually start to do that Tuesday. You know, at Seacoast, we're always thinking about how does this affect my Tuesday? So we had read enough marriage books that were all theology and like, mm-hmm. you know, you're meant to make each other holier and the theology around marriage.
Yeah.
So I would say it's probably more practical than...
I've never thought about this till you just said it, but because I'm a pastor, I tend to think in points and words that all start with the same letter.
Give us three points, man.
Story, scripture, and steps. And I would lean heavily on the steps, to Katie's point, only because in that season, I feel like we took so many false starts with a counselor, with a book, with a fill in the blank that were dead ends that we really wanted to help lay some tracks. So our story in terms of the brokenness, scripture in terms of like, what does the Bible say about that pain, our journey, mm-hmm. his love for us, all those things, and then steps for whether it's a betrayal, if it's relational drift, if it's pretty good, but you want to get to a new place. It's like the principles apply to all just because he made the blueprint for this right. relationship. So I'd say it leans more heavily on the...
And if you're wondering where the acronym STAY came from, mm-hmm. you can obviously point to Josh. Yeah.
You came up with that. We're going to get to that
here. We're going to give you that one because I'm terrible at acronyms.
Actually, right before we get to that acronym, I'm really curious if y'all had a couple come to y'all and say, listen, we respect y'all. We respect your story. Yes. We don't believe in God, but we need your help. Now, obviously, you would be honest and say, listen, without God, we're not together, just so you know. But do you all have practical tools that someone who's just like, I don't really want the God stuff, but can you help me in my marriage? Because you have counseling background. You guys believe in therapy and science and all mm-hmm. that. Like, is that something that y'all would be able to do?
Well, one of the biggest principles of the book is just endurance, learning mm-hmm. to stay through pain. I couldn't have done that without Jesus. But like I said, Josh had more in him than that, right. you know? And so I definitely think that people could apply the principles and that they could see themselves grow. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the truth of so many of God's principles mm-hmm. is that people are applying them all over the world and they see a harvest from it.
Yeah. I would say that was a big motivator behind the publisher that we chose to go with within HarperCollins. They've had a lot of crossover books that were written by believers but read by a largely secular audience. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like his word doesn't return void and the principles are all rooted in scripture. And so whether you're a believer or not, if you were willing to walk out the steps,
right.
I think God would get a hold of your heart. But, mm-hmm.
right.
but even if you didn't allow him to, I think they would lead to life because they're his.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think it's a great book to give to a non-believer because non-believers actually like to see us admit to sin. Christians don't like to Right. Let Christians right. admit to sin.
Yourself. We don't want to hear it.
Right. Non-believers are like, we all know exactly. that you don't have it together.
Just tell us
know?
It's happily and ever after.
Right? It's very true. So I think they're like, oh, good. Somebody's actually being honest.
Right. All right. Well, I do want to kind of close out with the STAY acronym. The first one is it starts with you.
So that is really all about when there's been, whether it's a betrayal, something like this, it's often very, or just drift. It's much easier to point a finger and blame someone else than it is to take ownership for yourself. And so not dismissing their decision, not you taking responsibility for their actions, but your attitude, you are the only thing that you can control and bring about change in. So start with you is really all about like, hey, before I go blaming you, calling you names, getting all over what you've done, let me take a closer look in to see what have I contributed to this, to own that.
And we still use that in small arguments today. That's why we say these principles, you know, when they get practical, they're helpful, even if you're not going through something where you're standing mm-hmm. on a pile of rubble like we were. You know, we get in an argument and it's so easy to see his wrong. like, you've made me feel this way. This is what you've done. But if you can just take a beat and say, okay, what have I done to contribute in this moment? Where am I off base?
Right.
You know, where am I expecting something I'm not even giving?
Yeah.
It can really help you to move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the T, we kind of already addressed it, but take any divorce talk off the table.
Yeah. That and also mentally quitting. You know, marriage is difficult. Right. It's really challenging. And if you have two people that are just think that they're complacent, coasting, like that just does not work. Pastor Chip Judd had told us when we got here that we needed to be a 10 and everyone else a 2. And that there needed to be that big of a gap between our love, our energy, our affection towards each other and others. And that was like, what to me? I'm like, my sister, yeah. our children, you know, to actually be a 10 takes so much time and energy and commitment. And so a lot of people, while they may not be quitting, meaning they're throwing out divorce all the time or they're contacting a lawyer, they're quitting on the intentionality marriage takes.
Mm, yeah.
So there's practical tips to say, like, how do you know that you're not quitting on each other? How yeah, can right. you really invest?
And which I would imagine there's a lot of marriages that are still together, but you have somebody or both who's quit.
Yeah. 100%. And I would say this principle is one that people easily dismiss that is arguably the most important, and that people quit long before they leave. And they quit on things and will cloak it in things like, well, he's always been that way. We've always been this way. We've never done that. Why would we start? These places in our mind that whether it comes to the friendship you share, your intimacy, your yeah. desires, what God could do through the two of you in the future, we quit on each other. We quit on God. So take quitting off the table is really settling like, man, God does not desire for me to have a mediocre, mundane marriage. He wants it to be full, abundant, mm-hmm. life-giving. But that's never going to happen if mentally, physically, emotionally, I've got a foot out the door mm-hmm. considering something else or assuming it's never going to change. So,
yeah, you're not growing together. You're growing apart.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. so yeah. it's just it's an important practical principle.
Yeah.
A is allow others to be a part of your story. And this is massive, especially in the church. We do think people would like to pay for counseling because they want the anonymity. They don't want to actually be vulnerable and broken in front of another person. So often couples that are in arguments that if they sat with another couple who could give them vision and hope, they could move forward. They could grow to a new place, but they don't. So they wait until, you know, everything's falling apart. And then they want to pay somebody to come and speak into that. When if they would have just allowed others to be a part of it, give them perspective, you know, give them encouragement, help them to move forward. And so we still use the practical tools of this still. If we get in an argument that gets us back into the same river, you know, where you're like, there's something else happening here. We're not just fighting about this Friday night. Mm-hmm. Like there's something else happening. We go sit with another couple and we're like, give us perspective. Help us see what we're not seeing. Where's our blind spot?
And even that is so powerful because it'll force us. If it's just us in the kitchen, our tone can get a little elevated. We can get a little sarcastic. We can use extremes. You always, you never. It can be about other things versus the topic at hand. Mm-hmm. But you sit down with another couple and you immediately weigh all those things. Mm-hmm. Your words, mm-hmm. your tone, you humble yourself. And it's one of those things I would say to this day, we're leading a small group launch series right now. And there's like 6 to 8 people at each table of 9 tables. And it's this principle, the idea of one of the questions, are there any couples you can fight in front of? Folks you could sit down with to help you process. And it's just a foreign concept. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? And, and yeah. so it feels like, yeah, when couples, you wait until you're at the end of your rope to get help. And even then, you reach out for counseling instead of phoning a friend. There's just this, man, in terms of being fully known, especially within the church, like, man, we've all got stuff.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
you could, that people don't have to have walked the road that you walked. Mm-hmm. But if you'll just sit down with them, confess your sin one to another that you may be healed. It's right. like there's so many passages that speak to that kind of mm-hmm. vulnerability yeah. and what God can do.
Yeah.
So,
Caitlin, do we have the thing that we're going to show the viewers here?
Oh, hey guys.
Hey, congratulations, you guys.
We are so excited how what God is doing through you two, your story, how God is using you all to restore and revive people first, and then marriages.
Yeah.
We are so proud of y'all. So excited.
Oh my goodness. I have referred this and recommended this book to so many people. Got friends buying it, strangers buying it. I'm even getting messages from friends from a long time ago because they heard you on Focus on the Family. So I am now a hero in their eyes.
Hey, I want to give you two a chance while we are on A, allow others to be a part of your journey, just to tell us what these guys meant to you guys your journey.
They mean everything. I mean, that's why I cry when I see Cindy Lake's face, because it's funny, when I was trying to learn the voice of God, you know, again, what he would say over me, it sounds so much like Cindy's voice. Mm-hmm. You know, she just like spoke so much love and hope over me, and that it's invaluable. Yeah. You know, and we need each other so much in these dark places of pain when we can't hear our shepherd's voice. All we can hear is all these other voices of the enemy and our own desires. And to be able to have somebody speak that into you, speak Jesus love into you, like, oh, if I could just live the rest of my life doing that for other people, it's like all I think would want to do.
The couple things that come to mind for me, I remember first coming down to meet Mac when we still lived in Nirmo. He was working through goal setting with me, and I'm thinking like, man, I'm unemployed. I'm staying home with kids. What goals could I possibly set right now? Nothing is going for me in life. And one of the goals was, in terms of being home with the kids, to be mentally present, not just physically present. I realized that in our pain and that season and our story, I would be around a lot, but mentally, man, my mind was elsewhere. And I say that just to say, Mac, in so many ways, like embodied the change I needed in my life and his pursuit of God and his love for Cindy, ministry, parenting. And so I'm so thankful for his example in that season and today. But one thing that just stands out in terms of this point, allow others to be a part of your story. I felt so many times as a pastor when we're meeting with a couple and you realize like you're in some way helping them, and they say like, hey, well, could we keep meeting together? Or, hey, could you, like, there's this pride in you that's like, yes, I will continue. But Mac pointed us to a small group. And so it's just a sweet, to this day, why I love so much sitting down with a table of couples, wherever they are in their journey, because it was the power of community, not just the power of a couple, that really brought about change in us. So, man, love them so much.
Awesome. Oh, they're not there anymore. Oh.
I didn't know if they were really there or if it was a video. So I was like, is that really Cindy? Do I wave?
Was that actually live?
Yeah.
I was like,
wow. Oh, my gosh.
I didn't know. I thought it was a video, I thought you
said play that deal, and I thought you asked them to say something and then sit there and smile.
Same. I did too. I was like, am I going to look like a crazy person, like still talking to her?
Hey, we'll wrap up with yield to vision, looking past what is and imagining what could be. I would love for y'all to speak directly to couples. I bet you some of them are listening who receive this link from someone saying, you guys, just listen to this conversation. It may bless you.
I would say, and you can kind of share the practical portion of that, I feel like much of our season of crisis came from vision drift. When Katie and I first met, we had so much vision of like, professionally, what do we want our lives to look like? How many kids do we want to have? Where do we want to spend the school year? Where do we want to live during the summer? We were going to be school teachers and global missions hosts throughout the summer, let our kids experience a American and global worldview, like vision upon vision, right? Mm-hmm. And then we get married, had our first baby, realized like, oh, you need insurance to have a baby. Oh, you need a paycheck when you're married, right? We were still in college. And so the vision shifted really quick for a bunch of practical ways. And we never pulled back to like reassess, who have we felt called to be? Where are we now? And God, what do we make of that? And so instead, we just kind of got to work responding. And 6-7 years in, we're like, look at where we are now. And so I would say yield to vision is so important in every season of marriage, just because this desired picture of the future and what God's calling you to is always what you're going after.
Yeah. And I think if you just simply think about vision as language, you know, putting language to growth, because what we're talking about is a new marriage with the same person. What we're talking about is growth in every season. And most couples don't take a minute to sit down and put language to that. What is God doing in us? Where is he taking us? And then to be able to say that, and, you know, we look back at our story and we say that marriage is hard and complicated. It's a garden. Well, if anything, it deserves to have the language surrounding it that says, okay, this is where we're moving forward. We're not empty nesters, like culture tells us. We're not just in a season of hustle with the kids. We're in the best decade of our life. We're going to make memories. Here's our priority. Here's the goals we're going after. Even simple stuff. Like right now, we feel like we're in a season of discipline and correction where God's trying to really align some order in our life. I mean, none of that is sexy and none of that is fun. Mm-hmm. But when you say, hey, God is disciplining us because he loves us. God is aligning things in our life because of what he has ahead. It's just language, putting language to what God's doing. And so there's practical tools of how do you get that language? And most people that are leading teams or businesses, they know they have to have this language to take anybody to a new place. Like even this podcast, we're going to do it this way. You got to tell them why. But in marriage, we just assume like people are there for the ride, you know? So it's just taking a minute to really craft that language of where are we going.
Yeah. I'm talking a lot about, like, I would say this is much more Katie's strong suit. Like at the end of each year, man, she's hardcore with power sheets and evaluating her goals. How did she grow? How did she not? What does she feel called to next year? And like, that's just not my natural flow, you know? And so I would say it's a place for couples where, man, vision is critical so that you can both run. But like, whereas for me, I've got a lot of vision for renovating homes. Like I can see brick and mortar and practical things and have vision, but like who we're becoming, the relational dynamics of our marriage and our family, there's a good chance that one of you is going to be a lot stronger suited in that than the other. So for vision, it doesn't mean they dictate or mandate it, but it means, man, we've got to be all the more intentional about coming together. So
let
that
them lead in the conversation.
Craft it and get vision. Yeah.
Hey, guys, they didn't even realize y'all were live. They thought it was a video.
We did not know that y'all were. I was like, am I going to look like a crazy person just sitting here like waving?
I thought maybe Joey had told you to like say a word or two and then sit there.
Just nod.
I gave them no prep. They had no idea. Hey, we did share some laughs before y'all joined us. I hear that part of their story is you guys, and they've been telling their story to a lot of people, and you guys have been getting a lot of phone calls of, hey, can you help us? Can you help us? Can you help us?
Our calendar has filled up with marriage counseling.
So they had to come up with an alias, right? Like not Mac and Cindy Lake. It's John and Barbara Johnson.
We need to call a different name.
I will tell you this. The cool thing is, before Mac and I meet with particular couples, and we literally in our preparing our hearts and praying for that time with them, we have such an excitement because we have lived through seeing two people that were so broken and were absolutely hungry and desperate to fight for what God's best for them. We saw it through their lives. And so Katie and Josh are so much a part of giving us the heart and the willing to fight with these couples. And so not only are Josh and Katie changing people through them, through their this book, through everything they put their hands on, they've extended it to us. And we're able to have the hope and the encouragement because we've lived it with them and just so grateful.
Thank y'all for carving out y'all's morning to pop in.
Yeah.
Happy to do it. Congratulations again, you guys.
Thank you so much.
All right. So we'll wrap this up with focus on the family. How was that? Was this more fun? Y'all can be honest. Yeah.
Honestly, you're better at it, obviously. All right. I know they've been doing it longer, but I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, they call me all the time. They want me to work for them.
Hey, if people only had time to read y'all's book or Tim Keller's Reason for Marriage, which one should they read?
I would say listen to Things You Don't Hear on Sunday and read our book.
High five.
That's awesome.
You've been listening to the Things You Won't Hear on Sunday Seacoast podcast. In the show notes, you'll see a link to our Facebook group page. Also, we'd love for you to consider subscribing so you get these episodes downloaded right when they come out. If you enjoy the podcast, we'd love for you to give us some love by rating us on iTunes or Spotify. We now have video versions of these episodes on our Seacoast YouTube channel for those who enjoy listening and watching. Thanks so much for listening.